It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Always love talking about the outdoors. That's what this show is all about. And part of the story in Wisconsin, even though we're starting to get into hunting season and, you know, the colder months, there's something called fall golf. Always look forward to it. The courses change. Sometimes aeration's a problem. Sometimes it's leaves on the green, all that stuff. Doesn't matter. We still go out and golf. I thought, who better to talk to than our friend of the show, Gary D'Amato. You can find his great work at wisconsin.golf. Covered every major event in golf for, I don't know, 100 years or so, something like that. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors, Gary.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
So I guess the easy one is the main difference you think in fall golf versus golf the rest of the year. I have some ideas, and I'll throw them at you, but I want to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, well, first of all, temperature. I mean, you know, fall golf, you're playing in the high 50s through the 70s. Ideal temperature, I think, to play golf. I don't know about you, Steve, but I don't like to play golf when it's 95 and 80% humidity.
I don't either.
And then you have the cool night. Yeah, you've got the cool nights, and the grass is growing great. The courses look great. The trees are starting to change colors, and maybe the courses aren't quite as crowded. Kids are back in school as they are in summer, so you play a little faster. So there's a lot of reasons, I think, to love fall golf in our state.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, that the weather's cooler and those leaves do fall. And it's sort of, not that I'm a cheater in golf, but, you know, I think the rules get a little laxer around the green. Because if you're going over, you know, fallen leaves on a green, I think everyone's going to give you like a 2-putt max and sort of speed it up for all the other golfers. But they are less crowded. I love that. And often a lot of these courses have lower rates in the fall, which I also appreciate.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't mention that part, but that's absolutely true. They lower their rates usually. And the colder the weather gets, rule of thumb is the cheaper the golf gets. So, you know, if you wait till January, Steve, you can probably play a lot of courses for 20 bucks.
Right. Yes. If I enjoy it. See, just like I don't like hot weather golfing, I do not appreciate cold weather golfing
yeah.
either.
Right.
All right. I had Rob Jansen from Wisconsin Golf Association on a few episodes ago. And we were talking about the popularity, Gary, of Wisconsin golf courses. This is one of those things that, and you can correct me, because is it like 9 of the top 100 or something like that of the best courses in America are in Wisconsin, or is it even better than that?
It's either 9 or 10, depending on which magazine, you know, ranking you look at. But yeah, 9 or 10. So 10% basically of the top 100 public access courses are in our state.
So what do you make of that? Like, why?
You know, I think there's several reasons. You know, we have some resorts that keep building golf, and it's like build it and they will come. I mean, Kohler Company, of course, has the complexes at Whistling Straits, two courses, and Black Wolf Run, two courses. They are building. They just announced they're building a 14-hole beginner-friendly course. They've got a par 3 course, and then Sand Valley has all these great courses, and they keep adding. So I think, you know, the topography is great. The weather's good, as you mentioned. The golf is really accessible and, for the most part, affordable until you get, you know, that's debatable when you get to the big resorts, how much golf course costs at them. But, I mean, there's just a lot of reasons I think people love coming to our state to play golf.
I know you cover the golf of it, you know, the performance side a lot, but you talk about some of the corollary stuff. But just the, like, have you ever, like, dug deep into the economic impact of golf courses, golf resorts, the long stays for the, you know, the golf weeks and golf weekends on the state of Wisconsin?
I haven't really dug into that, but I do know, Steve, that when major championships come here, you know, we've got 3 PGA championships this year. We had a U.S. Women's Open. We've had a couple other U.S. Women's Open, a U.S. Open, and U.S. Amateur. When all those tournaments come here, the economic impact is huge. I think the Ryder Cup, when it came to Whistling Straits, in 2021, I think the economic impact was $85 to $100 million, depending
wow.
how you counted it. And then, you know, the other majors between $35 and $70 million, depending if it's the Women's Open or the Men's Open. So you add them all up, and there's been, you know, $500 million in economic impact just from those major championships in the last 10 or 12 years.
So one of the big stories, of course, is that we've had the PGA and the U.S. Open and the Ryder Cup, but now there's this lull for, not just a lull, it's a long period of time. Why do you think that is, where we're not going to be hosting a men's event for quite a while?
Well, you know, it depends how you classify major championships? I think most casual golfers think of U.S. Open, PGA Championship, right? Those are the majors, Women's Open. So we're not getting those for the foreseeable future, but we are getting 13 USGA championships over the next, like, 20 years. Hmm. And we've had a bunch of them already. So events like the U.S. Boys Junior, U.S. Girls Junior, the Mid-Amateur, U.S. Amateur is coming back, and they're all going to either Erin Hills, Whistling Straits, Black Wolf Run, or Sand Valley. So although we're not getting the U.S. Open and might not get another one for a while, we are getting a lot of high caliber best players in the world outside of the PGA Tour, basically.
Gary D'Amato from Wisconsin.golf. You can find his great work there. We're going to take a quick break on WTMJ Outdoors. After the break, innovations in golf technology, the style of golf courses. We certainly talked about Sand Valley in the center of the state. I heard they're building a lot more courses. We'll talk to Gary about that and more on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Our guest is Gary D'Amato. You can see his great writing about golf and the golf world. Wisconsin.golf is where you can find it. Gary, I'm going to say Sand Valley. I was recently up in the center of the state, Wisconsin Rapids area, and I was talking to golfers who had just come over from Sand Valley. They're talking about building, am I right, 9 different courses at the end of this project, all these projects they've been working on. Is that right?
You know, I don't know if there is an end. I talked to Michael Kaiser about 2 weeks ago, who owns the resort with his brother, Christopher, and they manage the resort. And, you know, they own 15,000 acres, and Michael told me their goal is to own 100,000 acres up there.
Jeez, wow.
So they're buying all this land in the central sand barrens, which is not a lot of people know this, Steve, but, you know, the middle of our state was once, there was once a huge prehistoric lake in glacial times. And when the lake broke its dam, when the climate changed, what was left behind was 200 feet deep of sand in the middle of our state. Sand, as most golfers know, is a great, it's great for building golf courses. You can sculpt it and mold it. It drains easy. Things grow in it fast. So it's a great, great place to build golf. And yeah, they have 5 courses now. And there, Michael Kaiser told me he's got 5 more ideas in the back of his mind. So
Wow. It
could be 10 courses in another 10 or 15 years up there.
So do you know of another example? Because you're all over the country and all over the world covering golf. Is there another example of sort where you're seeing this boom happen in a state in the United States?
The only other place I can really think of, well, first of all, the Kaiser brothers are doing this in other states now. They've got outside of Denver and in southeast Texas, they've bought thousands of acres and they're building what they call Dream Golf. They call the resorts Dream Golf. So they're throwing up a bunch of courses in those states. But the big one and the impetus for all this building is Bandon Dunes, which was built by the Kaiser brothers' father, Mike Kaiser, about 20, 25 years ago. And there's a bunch of courses out there, and people are flying from all over the world to play courses on Oregon's remote coast. So, there's a few other places in America this is happening, but Wisconsin is one of the places that's leading the charge right now.
We talk a lot in a lot of different sectors, industries, about innovations and technology. You and I both know very well all the innovations in clubs and the golf balls that we hit with our clubs. What about golf courses? You know, we traditionally walk a course or take a cart. They don't all look the same. We have prairie style. We have, sort of the open concept. Then we have the wooded courses. Is there a trend that's sort of moving us in a certain direction as far as golf course design, or where are we going with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. See, the trend over the last 20 years, and it basically sprang out of Bandon Dunes, which I just talked about, is this minimalist, linksy type course. And if you go up to, when I say minimalist, I mean they're not moving much dirt on these courses. They're not, building courses as much as laying fairways and greens over the existing terrain. Erin Hills was built that way, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Sand Valley stuff is built that way. And it has a really rugged, natural look. Nothing looks contrived or manufactured. It just looks like, Mother Nature made this beautiful piece of ground and then we came along and just put fairways and greens over the top of it. And I think that's been the trend in golf course architecture the last couple decades.
We're talking to Gary D'Amato. Wisconsin.golf is where you can find his great work. I had a chance on a recent trip to Scotland. I didn't golf at St. Andrews, the old course, but I hung around there for a few hours, and it was actually a day where it was absolutely gorgeous out, nice weather, sunny, which is not always the case at that course. Have you played there, and what was your experience, if you have?
You know, I have played the old course. It was in 1999, I believe, or maybe right around there. It's when Kohler Company bought the Old Course Hotel and the Duke's Course there in Scotland, mm-hmm, in St. Andrews. They invited a bunch of writers to play in a sort of a Ryder Cup competition. It was 12 U.S. writers against 12 writers from the U.K. We finished with singles matches on the old course. It was raining horizontally, 45 oh, degrees, geez, blowing 40 miles an hour. And it was one of the most fun days I've ever had on a golf course. And by the way, I closed my point out 3-1 on the road hole, and it doesn't get much better than that.
Right. So my experience. I wasn't golfing, but I was talking to golfers as they were coming off 18, and I was asking them because it was super calm that day, perfect weather, 70. And I go, how was the round? And they go, man, not bad. It wasn't that windy. If you hit them straight, you had a good round. And I go, that's not what you usually hear from people that are golfing that course. So even on a tough course like that, on a non-traditional weather day, people were having fun there. Let's close with this. As you have celebrated, how many years you've been covering golf now, 40 or 50 years?
Yeah, it started in the 80s in Racine. So, yeah, covering local golf. So, I don't know, 40 years you can call it.
We've lived through the Tiger Woods stuff and you know, the Scottie Scheffler, great story last weekend, of course, in golf with the sort of a, not a newcomer, but a different winner, which surprised some people. What do you think the next big story in golf is, Gary?
You know, I think it's most golf fans are following what's going on between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf, the two organizations that have, you know, that are split apart and probably will never get together. I just think the next big story is, what's going to happen down the road to those two organizations? What are they going to get together ever? Is there going to be a team golf component on the PGA Tour? I think the tour is doing a lot of things with these, you know, reduced field events and more money trying to up the ante and keep LIV Golf at bay. But at some point, I think there's going to have to be some kind of detente or a meeting of these two organizations. And I think a few years down the road, we might see an entirely different sort of PGA Tour. So I think that's going to be one to follow.
Dogs and cats living together, Gary, the LIV Tour and the PGA Tour. Will it all work? Right. Gary, you're saying yes.
I'm saying possibly, but I'll hedge my bet on that one.
He's Gary D'Amato. He does great work writing about golf and playing golf. Wisconsin.golf is where you can find his great work. Always enjoy hanging out, talking about golf. Great sport. I enjoy it. And fall golf is certainly here as we celebrate the great outdoors. Thanks for hanging out, Gary.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Appreciate it.
You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, right here on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Always fun talking about boating. So if you live in the state of Wisconsin or even the Midwest, you know that how big this story is in those months of the year when the lakes and rivers are not frozen. So I thought, because I get these questions all the time, because I've always put my email out there, and it's steve.scafidi2fs1d at wtmj.com. Talk about boats more. Everybody's got a boat. Everybody's buying boats. And who better to talk to than one of the leading sellers of boats and all things boats, Skipper Buds. We're talking today to Mike Westcott, sales manager at Skipper Buds. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors, Mike.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
All right, so let's go general first. As somebody, I don't know how long you've been in the business, but boats are very popular in Wisconsin. We all know that. We've all been on them. If you do any sort of outdoor recreation in the summer in Wisconsin, I'll be on one this weekend, for that matter. What are the trends in your industry right now?
I would say the biggest thing from a boating perspective is definitely pontoons are super popular. They, you know, I started here 13 years ago. They were what you thought they were, kind of 20-foot boats, you know, just very simple. Now they are floating living rooms with, you know,
good description,
a thousand horsepower on them if you really, really wanted to go nuts. So it's exciting to see, and they're fun, and they kind of fit a mold for everyone. Whereas, you know, I'm 40-year-old with a couple kids, it's perfect. You know, throw my kids on, some friends, and go float on Okauchee Lake or Pewaukee Lake for a Sunday afternoon. It's it's a perfect day. You bring in the family together, and we can do all sorts of sports with it, and it's just, it kind of combines everything. It's, I kind of call them mullet boats, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
In all intents and purposes, it's, you know, it, it really can perform the way it needs to, but on top, it's just, you know, it's, you can do just about anything you need it to.
So as I travel around the state, I often get invited to go to people's lake houses and cabins and stuff and ride on their boats. And pontoon, as you said, very popular. It's almost, if you have a cabin, you must have a pontoon. Now, I know, having talked to these folks, it goes from the very basic older pontoons, which you can still pick up for, I don't know, $5,000 to $10,000, and all the way up to, somebody told me, I forgot who it was, that they spent upwards of $75,000 on their pontoon boat. And it was a nice pontoon boat. But it, it, there is this wide range of what you can, one, only one you can only afford, but two, the things you want to put on the pontoon boat. So you've sold these things. What are some of the things that people are doing with these things that make them go up to some of these almost unheard of price levels?
It's really your engine. It's the horsepower.
Oh, okay.
So tri-tunes, which just gives you a third tune underneath the bottom, which really makes it perform like a traditional fiberglass boat. And it's really, people just want more and more and more horsepower. First it was everyone had to have a 150, then it was everyone needs a 200, and now it's everyone needs a 250, which you really don't, but it just becomes keeping up with the Joneses. And, you know, like I had mentioned, I mean, you can get a twin powered pontoon now with twin 500 horsepower engines on it.
No kidding. So much of the recreation industry was impacted by the pandemic, and as people sought out an opportunity to get outside more and versus staying in the inside, boating was part of that. I talked to a national boating expert, and they said, yeah, post-COVID, searching for value, searching for opportunity to get outside, I mean, that has to be driving this sort of increasingly popular way to boats.
It is. It's, I think part of it is just the manufacturing costs of other boats skyrocketed. Where pontoons did too, but they're a little bit simpler to construct. So you're not paying for fiberglass resin and in different types of motors, but it definitely allows there to be some value so that you know, you can still get a pontoon on a trailer for around $30,000. Which, you know, when you break it out on financing to a 15-year, 20-year note, it can be affordable to everybody, whereas, you know, some of the other stuff naturally isn't.
Do you have an idea on the percentage of people, let's say new cabin owners, they are in the market for boats potentially. What, if you know, percentage of people that buy pontoons versus traditional boats, fishing boats?
I would say, I mean, 60%.
Really?
You know, just shooting from the hip. It's just, it's taking over. It's kind of taking away those fiberglass buyers just because of how versatile they are. And, you know, that's, you know, it's become such a part of our business.
We're talking to Michael Westcott, sales manager at Skipper Buzz. We're going to have a longer conversation in the second half of this interview about some of the hot topics in Wisconsin boating, like wake bands and the like. But as far as pontoons, as far as boating in general, what are, as someone who sells them, what should people be looking at as far as just looking out for certain things? Obviously, how the motor runs is part of that, but any other sort of tips and do's and don'ts when it comes to purchasing either a used, pre-owned, or a new boat?
You know, I would say it's, you know, especially the used and the pre-owned side of it, it's just, there's a lot. If you go on Facebook Marketplace now, you can find hundreds of boats, which is fine. You know, people can sell them and get a premium for them, but just make sure you're protecting yourself. You know, it just, you're hard, having a hard time reaching out, and you're having a hard time reaching whoever that is, or, you know, even if it's a dealership, if they can't get back to you when you're trying to buy something, just imagine them trying to go back to when you're trying to get something fixed or something don't go right. But just all of a sudden also read the details. You know, the devil's always in the details of what's included, what's not included. So if you go to inquire about something and all of a sudden, you know, it's, you go there thinking it's $25,000, and before you're done, you're $35,000, $36,000. That's a pretty big swing. Just make sure you're doing your research, doing your due diligence, and if it doesn't smell right, you know, it should start setting some alarms off.
Before we go to break, are there still Wisconsin manufacturers of the of pontoon boats? I know there's boat manufacturers.
Yes, I believe Flagship is made in Wisconsin. I'd have to do some more research on it. We do not carry them. But, you know, there are several Wisconsin boat manufacturers, but from pontoon, I think that might be the only one. And if not, there might be a couple other smaller ones that, you know, aren't necessarily mainstream, but they do exist.
We're talking boats in Wisconsin as we talk about and celebrate the great Wisconsin outdoors, WTMJ Outdoors. Michael Westcott, our guest. One more segment coming up after the break. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. I'm Steve Scavita, your host, and our guest for this next segment, Michael Westcott, sales manager for Skipper Buds, Pewaukee, Lake Country, as we like to say, in southeastern Wisconsin. All right, I was thinking about this during the break. Is there a best time to buy a boat, new boat? Like, is winter best because it's no one's on the lakes or rivers? Is there a best time?
There definitely is, and it's anytime you can't use a boat, it's the best time to buy a boat. Just in that dealers, manufacturers are more motivated to move them, especially when there's snow on the ground, to, you know, get them off the lot or stop paying interest and of the like, or right around model year turn, which is right about now, that, you know, we have 2025 stuff still laying around and all the 2026s are on their way. So it's one of those things where we're motivated to move them because we've got, you know, fresh stuff coming and want to make sure that we clear space for them.
We were talking about pontoon boats in the first segment. Does it change year to year? Are there like things that like are, oh wow, this is brand new, that no one's doing this year? Does that happen much in the industry?
It definitely, it seems like it's speeding up in that regard, you know, year over year, whereas there's used to be subtle changes, and now there's more and more electronics being put into pontoons with your glass dashes and having multiple touchscreens, and even having, you know, cool touch vinyl interiors where you have a black vinyl in a boat where normally you couldn't because it would be so hot, but now the heat dissipates off of it. So it's kind of cool and you can really stand yourself apart. But it seems like every year and every model turn, there is just more and more stuff coming, whereas usually it would take years for that.
One of the big hot topics, I've talked to some outdoors writers about this, is wake boats, the banning in some places in the state of Wisconsin. So it's a hot topic. How do you, as a seller of boats, address that with your potential buyers?
I mean, the biggest thing is, it's as a dealer, you know, who sells them, is we kind of have to be Switzerland on it. We're boaters. And, you know, I personally wake surf, and I love it. And being, you know, something that I can do, and, you know, I can fall and it doesn't hurt, and it's just a lot of fun. But, you know, we're all boaters. We have to find a way to get along and be respectful to each other. And I think that's the biggest part of this, is it's proper education and enforcing proper boating and spreading the word of, you know, how you should boat and how you should not boat that makes the difference. Because I think at the end of the day, there's research one way, and then you can find just as much research on the other side of it. But it's just a matter of, you know, we as boaters have to enjoy our natural resources that are out there, and Wisconsin has an abundance of them. And I think we can all get along, but we just have to find a middle ground to make sure that, you know, we can all coexist and be happy and enjoy our summers, because they're pretty short here in Wisconsin.
They are. They're too short. We're talking to Michael Westcott, sales manager at Skipper Buds in Pewaukee, Lake Country, as they like to say. In the housing industry, there's a thing called a buyer's market and a seller's market. It kind of, you know, cycles back and forth. In the world of boats and the boating industry, where are we at right now?
We're definitely in a buyer's market, which is nice. During COVID, it was, you know, we couldn't get enough boats in stock. People were buying them, and they were buying things that they didn't necessarily want, but it was all they could get. Whereas now, from a buyer's perspective, there's choice. You know, they can research 10 different boats they want to see, and if it doesn't make sense, then they don't buy. Whereas, you know, manufacturers and dealers and even banks from a finance perspective are trying to earn their business, and it's definitely a buyer's advantage right now versus, you know, as much as it's been since we've gotten through the COVID stuff.
Before we give you a chance to tell people how they can find you and Skipper Buds, the number one consideration for someone who has never bought a boat before, what should they be thinking about? What should they educate themselves on before they step into a place that sells boats?
And people do it now more than, you know, we realize is do your research online. You know, you go online, you see, kind of envision how you plan on boating. You know, what does your perfect Sunday look like? Who are you with? What are you trying to accomplish? And that will get you halfway there. And then, you know, go online and Google, you know, kind of some of the stuff you like to do or have you at least familiar with, and you can get a pretty good idea before even getting into a dealership, just because so much more is available online. It's kind of trending towards where the car world is, where you can pretty much have your everything figured out before you even step in a dealership, and you know more than the salesperson, but which isn't necessarily the case yet for our stuff, but you can really do a lot of really good research prior to going in dealership and even looking on Boat Trader, Yacht World, manufacturers' websites, and have a kind of an idea of where, you know, where this boat could transact. You know, there's always stuff that the public wouldn't know about, and rebates and such, but at least there's a lot more data available now versus even 13 years ago when I started.
Yeah, like they say, do your homework. All right, so all the geeks out there that have boats say, all right, you got to ask him what kind of boats he has. So what kind of boat or boats do you have?
I personally don't have one.
Oh.
We have a company boat on Okachi that we use a couple times a summer. You know, and it's, for me, it works just because I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old who are both in sports. Mm-hmm. So my summer is completely consumed with either selling boats or playing baseball. So, the days we do get are perfect and they're priceless. Floating around and just, you know, my kids are content just jumping in the water.
As we would like all kids to be, have fun on the boat and in the waterways of Wisconsin. All right, so great conversation. If folks want to get a hold of you, Mike Westcott, sales manager at Skipper Buds, or check out the boats at your great locations, what do they have to do?
The easiest is just go to www.skipperbuds.com. You can see not just Pewaukee's inventory there, but you can actually see our national inventory. So we have quite a bit to offer everywhere from, you know, 16, 17, 18 foot runabouts, pontoons, all the way up to, you know, some of our bigger Lake Michigan stuff going all the way up to, you know, 80 or so feet. So a lot of stuff on there, but otherwise you can always pick up the phone as well, call 262-544-1200, and we're happy to help you.
Great resource. It's one of the reasons I contacted Skipper Buds, because they know of what they speak and they know the boating industry better than anybody else. Thanks for hanging out on WTMJ Outdoors, Mike.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. You've been listening to WTMJ Outdoors. Lots more to come on this Saturday. Lots more on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. One of the things that I love to do on this program is to sort of tell the story, right? We talk to boat dealers. We talk to hunting and fishing guides. We talk to people who actually participate in all the great things we do outdoors, whether it's kayaking or canoeing and even hunting and fishing. We talk to the sports writers who cover the great outdoors. Today is one of those ones where we talk to a sort of an outdoors enthusiast. That's Mark Jablonek, who joins us on WTMJ Outdoors. Happy Saturday. Happy outdoors, Mark.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, so here's the thing. Simple question, sort of a big picture question. Why do you love the outdoors?
Why do I love the outdoors? Because I guess probably as a kid, my mother was always go outside and play.
We all got that.
Yeah, well, you know, but you have to remember I'm over 60 years old and there was a lot less distractions indoors as there are today. And for me, we had a woods that was by us, and it was a source of adventure for me and my brother. We would go out there, and we would just explore, learn to climb trees, catch turtles and frogs and toads, and just learn about things. My dad was very instrumental in that as well. Matter of fact, he had us join the Boy Scouts when we were younger, Cub Scouts and then Boy Scouts. And being outdoors is just something that I guess I've always done. And when I was in corporate America working in sales and sales training, sales marketing, sales management, the hardest thing for me was sitting inside all day long. I couldn't wait to get outside and breathe some fresh air.
So very common background to mine. Actually, I was in the Boy Scouts, learned how to tie all those knots and do all the great stuff outdoors, had the zip packs and the fun things that we used to do as sort of regular exercises when we were camping. I know you hunt and fish. Do you remember going back all those years, your like the story of your first hunt or what it felt like? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Do you remember that?
You know, I do. And my first hunt was a how not to hunt.
Okay, tell us.
Well, my dad had moved us to a dairy farm in Colby, Wisconsin, home of world-famous Colby cheese.
Yes.
In 1971. And in 1972, after reading a lot about Fred Bear and outdoor life, I thought I wanted to be a bow hunter, go bow hunt deer. Well, the thing about the early 70s was there weren't as many deer in Wisconsin as there are today, number one. Number two, there weren't things like compound bows or crossbows back then, so it was basically a stick bow, an old-time, you know, vertical bow. I didn't know how to buy a bow. I didn't know how to buy arrows or broadheads. And I also didn't practice. One thing, if you're going to be shooting a bow and arrows, you have to learn how to practice. I also didn't have the clothing that I needed. Matter of fact, I think I went out to hunt the first time wearing the clothes I wore to school that day. I living on a dairy farm in north central Wisconsin, I knew that we had deer in the field, so I just walked down the road, hopped into a field, walked along the field edge, saw that there was a nice rock on the other side of the barbed wire fence, sat down, and I was ready to hunt. And, you know, you sit there for a while, you get a little distracted, and I was watching some mouse crawling around down by my feet. I look up, and there's a deer, there's a doe, 12 feet on the other side of this four-strand barbed wire fence. So I slowly drew my bow, aimed, shot, and the arrow hit off the barbed wire fence, went up into the air. She ran out into the middle of the field, and then I proceeded to lob arrows at her from about 35 yards away.
Jeez.
So that's probably my best memory of my first hunt.
Let's fast forward to today. I know you do a lot of hunting and fishing. How do you connect and participate with the outdoors today?
Well, there's a number of things that I do. I belong to an organization called Safari Club International, which is a hunting conservation organization. I've belonged to other organizations over the years, like Whitetails Unlimited, Wild Turkey Foundation. I belong to the Daniel Boone Conservation League in Richfield. I enjoy hunting. I enjoy fishing. My hunting partner's an avid fisherman. And so I'll go out on Pewaukee with my five-year-old grandson, and we'll fish for out there for some panfish or anything we can honestly catch. Later today, I'm actually going to be helping my regular hunting partner put together some ladder stands and put some ladder stands up for him, check his trail cameras, do some work in his food plots. I travel quite a bit to hunt. I was in Africa last year at this time doing a hunt that I'd been planning for a couple of years for something I wanted to do. I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm very active in hunting in that everybody says, well, you know, what are you hunting next? I don't know. Well, it depends on what's in season and what's available at the time. And I'll have guys call me up and say, hey, you want to go hunting? Sure. When? And they'll give me a date and I'll say, well, where are we going? You know, okay, it sounds good. And then I ask them, what are we hunting? It's just something that I enjoy doing. Now that I'm 3 years retired from corporate America, I'm very fortunate in that I do have a wife who does not mind me going away and doing these things that I enjoy doing.
Happy some wife, happy don't. Life. Yeah, some people don't. Let's take a break. I want to get into that off-continent hunting experience. You're talking about hunting in Africa and some of the big game you've hunted. We'll do that with our guest, Mark Jablonek, an outdoors enthusiast and a hunter and a fisherman. We will continue the conversation on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, after this on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Great guest in this segment, Mark Jablonek, outdoors enthusiast. He talked in the first segment, Mark, about hunting in Africa. As someone who's never done that, I've had an offer recently. Tell us what that is like. It's certainly a different environment, a massive continent, big game. Walk us through that, because I've never experienced it.
Africa is an incredible hunt. And if you ever talk to anybody who's ever been to Africa, they can't wait to get back there. It's, you know, if you hunt in the United States, you're normally hunting for a specific species, white-tailed deer, elk, turkey, something along those lines. In Africa, there's game everywhere. And quite frankly, it's just a matter of what do you want to harvest that day? It's actually less expensive to hunt Africa, again, certain species, than it would be to say to hunt a guided mule deer hunt out west or a elk hunt out west. And the experience is just phenomenal. You know, the only downfall with hunting Africa is it's not in the next zip code. Mm. You have to get on a flight and you've got to get there. But the experience is incredible. My first hunting experience in Africa, I had purchased a hunt through an organization that was having a fundraiser. I purchased the hunt, got a great deal on it. I got there. Africans love American hunters. They're very friendly to us. They take care of you. My first morning I got up, now there's a 7-hour time difference. So my first morning getting up was midnight at home at 7 a.m. there. Big table full of food. They didn't know what I wanted to eat. We hop in the truck. We just start driving, looking. He goes, would you like to shoot that? Would you like to harvest that? Is that something you're interested in? Quite frankly, it's just a matter of, you know, what your budget is and what would you like to, you know, have a story to tell about later.
How do you transport the game back? Somebody asked me that question. I have no idea.
Oh, you ship it back. You don't just put it into a carton and go to UPS with it.
Right.
It normally has to, certain government organizations will first they have to dry down the hide and the horns, make sure that there aren't any bugs, any disease on it, make sure that it hasn't rotted. Then a government veterinarian will take a look at it, give it his check, her check mark, okay on it. Then they put it in a crate and they, either airlift it back or put it on a boat and have it shipped back. I normally have mine come through the port of Chicago and I'll just run down to Chicago and pick it up there.
Last question for you. I can tell immediately when you started talking that you're an outdoors enthusiast. And you love the outdoors. How is your love of the outdoors and hunting and fishing and doing all those things you've talked about impacted your life? There's always a connection to that story, right? It's always part of a bigger picture. How has that impacted or changed you?
I'm a heck of a conservationist. And by that, I mean, if it should be recycled, I'm putting it in the recycling bin. If I'm walking around my neighborhood and it was windy that day and something blew out of somebody's garbage can, I'm picking it up and putting it in garbage cans. I'm always looking to try and do something and keep nature as pristine as possible. I was with a walk with a buddy of mine a couple of years ago at a state park in New Jersey, and I came back with two armloads full of garbage that I picked up, and he was just disgusted and appalled at me because I was walking around with all this garbage in my arms, but it was just something that I did. And I think my dad gave me that love of the outdoors.
I think that's the right way to look at it. I do the same thing. I used to take these walks, and I used to always bring a bag with me. And if you're out there and you can, why not? Mark Jablonek, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Keep up your love of the outdoors. And it's a great way, as I've told my listeners, to sort of relate what we talk about with the big picture stuff to an individual who enjoys it as much as we all do. So thanks for coming on WTMJ Outdoors.
You're welcome, Steve.
Great show as always. We'll do it again next Saturday. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.